Hello, Poke fans. Welcome to the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, or Stabcast for short, your twice-monthly look into the deeper world of Pokemon. I'm your host, Trainer Spike, and with me, as always, are my fellow trainers Slagkick,
Gengar,
and Sulker.
I see it clearly. I could see into your spirit.
Today is January 29th, 2017, and this is Stabcast Episode 13, Spooky Bits and Other Strangenesses. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of our venture into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. This week, Trainer Spike, which is me, will be leading a discussion about some of the scarier aspects of Pokemon lore in celebration of our 13th episode. But first, let's talk about our Poke Weeks. Sulker, I'd like you to go first.
Let's see. Not a whole lot going on this week, Pokemon-wise, for me.
Did you get a new deck of Pokemon cards?
I was going to get to it. Calm down. So I got a new deck of Pokemon cards. Shadowed Forests deck, the Decidueye deck. I got it from a very cute trainer. And then, like, I told him, hey, no, I already got one of these for my boyfriend, so could you not? And then he was like, okay. And then it turns out it was still my boyfriend.
Oh, hell. Oh, wait. I follow you. Okay.
Wait, Professor Kukui gave you a deck?
I said trainer, not trash. At any
Them's
rate...
Them's fighting words.
No, me and Kukui, we go way back. Don't even worry about it. So I got that deck. It's really cool. It's got a lot of new TCG cards with the Alolan cards in it, so I'm highly excited to use that. I also played a little bit of Pokemon Go and continued breeding Passimians. Still only on 4 IVs, which is upsetting, but you'll get there eventually. Otherwise, watching the anime, trying Pokemon Co-Master, or Pokemon Duel as it's called here, and we'll talk about that when we get to the news piece on it. But that was it for me. How about you, Slagkick?
Yeah, it's been a pretty Poke-light, vanilla-light weekend for me. Haven't done a lot of gaming lately. Just, you know, kind of busy IRL stuff. Not having a lot of luck with any new Pokemon Go catches. I feel like I need to really venture out and make a point. Like, I guess the most notable Poke Go thing that happened is that we were playing a pen and paper game with some of our friends, and one of my friends was talking about that, or one of our friends, rather, was talking about how she knows a good place locally that has a lot of seals, and so she was happy that she finally got a Dewgong. I'm like, man, I don't think I've ever even seen a seal, so I guess I really need to make a point to that. I guess that was kind of a Poke Week thing, that I was like, I should make a point to go places where there are more likely to be interesting Pokemon, because in my neighborhood, it's just pretty much usually the same thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, I haven't started doing any breeding stuff, but kind of been reading up. I really want to, you know, start leveling an Eevee team, but, you know, since different ones might need different IVs and stuff and different natures, I'm kind of like trying to be just read up on all the different Eevees and their egg moves. Eevees being like actual Eevees, but not also Eevees.
Yes, that was clear.
So yeah, I mean, probably a big way to jump into like the Eevee and IV Eevees, but you know.
Excellent. Let me ask, did either of you guys experiment with the new Pokemon Bank update?
I did not get a chance yet, but that's something I was excited to finally hit.
Yeah, I'm happy that it's out there. I haven't had a chance to, just because I haven't had a whole lot of game time this week. What about you, Spike?
All right, well, in terms of the trading card game, I got the Roaring Heat theme deck.
Is that the Niabi deck?
Of course it is. I'm really excited about that, you know, need to support my cute Litten. Did check out a little bit of the Pokemon Bank update for Sun Moon and you know, Pokemon Transporter to get like old Pokies into it. You know, so it's all really cool. It all works to me really easily, but I also don't mess with glitch Pokemon. I noted that a lot of people online were having issues with the various Pokemon Bank update stuff.
That's why you don't bring missing number into your Pokemon Bank. Duh.
Right? Well, apparently when you try, it like shifts all of your Pokemon names and like causes all kinds of weirdnesses. And it's like, why would you want to do that? I don't get it.
I mean, people remember how this was affecting the original games, right? Like, how did they not think that this would still be a problem?
Well, right? And there have been waves of bans of users. So, I mean, we're practically talking about the news already. Let me wrap up my Poke Week. I started playing Pokemon Snap on Virtual Console, so that has been really cool.
Yay!
And played a little Poke Go and a little bit of Poke Duel, which we will talk about a little later.
So I wish you had told me that you were getting those decks, because I would have picked up the Bright Tide deck and we could have played, especially because that's a water and electric deck.
I actually bought one for you.
What?
I'll give it to you after the show.
Aww. Well, thank you. I guess let's get to those Poke News or Muse in the meantime.
Sure. Let me go ahead and start off with this week's first news bit. So there's a little bit of, I mean, we always say a little bit of news out of the TCG side, but we are always constantly surprised happily to see new stuff coming out.
Well, I think at this time in the cycle, you know, the anime is not quite in like filler, but you know, it's not like big episodes with like the important like trial fights or whatever. You know, we have a movie that's coming up, but we're not in like the promo phase. So I think the card game is really the only area where we're really seeing a lot of movement right now.
Oh, and I'm really excited for that. That wasn't a read on this. That was a, like, oh, there's always constantly movement here, and I'm super excited to report on it. So let's see. Looks like we're getting, in May, a 3-pack pin blister featuring pins of Entei, Suicune, or Raikou.
Ooh.
We're also getting a new Legacy Evolution pin collection box featuring Gen 2 Pokemon. The ones specifically that evolve out of Gen 1 Pokies. The Legacy Evolution pin collection includes a foil card featuring Steelix EX, five foil promo cards featuring Politoed, Slowking, Crobat, Blissey, and Blossom, a awesome Crobat collector's pin, 5 Pokemon TCG booster packs, and obviously a code for the online trading card game. This is exciting for a lot of reasons. People are speculating online that this will relate to Pokemon Go releasing new Generation 2 Pokemon into the game. Based on how when the game originally came out, the collectible card game came out with outdated Team Plasma decks featuring Articuno, Zapdos, and Moltres. So we're excited to see that there should be some movement there in Pokemon Go, which may be hinted at here in the card game area. What do you guys think about this news bit?
I am excited for the theory that we're going to get more Pokemon Go Pokies, and even more excited for the idea of getting more of these pin blisters, because I'm really into them.
Yeah, I'm really excited, especially for the Suicune blister. You know, that's always been one of my favorite legendaries, so, and Pokemon just in general.
Awesome. I also have a news story, but first I have to say one thing in my Poke Week I forgot to note is that I got a super cute little, like, Litten toy. It has a Pokeball that he lives in, and he's super cute, and I'm very happy about it.
Oh, and I guess I also have a very similar news, or not news bit, but I also got a Rowlet, or Mokuro, who lives in his Pokeball here at the studio.
Adorable.
So my news story is that we now know the name of the English set of Pokemon cards that are going to be released in May. This is our equivalent of the Japanese Second Sun and Moon set, which are called Islands Waiting for You and Moonlight of Alola. This is going to be called Guardians Rising. And in case you hadn't guessed by the way that's named,
it's going to be about Guardians of the Galaxy?
It's going to be about the various Tapus. So that's going to be really cool, obviously. I'm going to LOL every time I'm like, Tapu Koko, I choose you. You Tapu live in a Pokeball. You're not helping anybody.
Oh, buddy.
All right, so we had alluded to Pokemon Bank, and now that the Pokemon Bank update is now live, we have a little bit more information. Some surprises, for me at least. Of course, this added the functionality to transfer Pokemon from your 3DS Virtual Console releases of Red, Blue, Green, and Yellow to Pokemon Sun and Pokemon Moon. The Pokemon have a chance to transfer with their hidden ability, which is very cool, and have the chance for at least 3 IVs to be maxed out.
Oh, wow.
So, who knows, there might be some with perfect IVs, but some might have no IVs, but so far what people have reported is they have found 3 IV Pokemon.
That's great.
That's really great from a breeding standpoint, because that way you get like a lot of genetic diversity real easy just by playing the old games and transferring them up.
Yeah. The nature will be randomly selected, which is interesting. I thought it might have to do with like how the stats were computed, but maybe not. Apparently not. If you transferred from the Virtual Console games, it will have a Game Boy symbol, which I guess doesn't really affect gameplay. But the one that was really surprising for me, and which is great news, is that if you have your Pokemon Bank linked to your Generation 6 games, then it will update your Pokédex in Sun and Moon with the information from those games. So you won't have to actually transfer those Pokemon to Pokemon Bank and then put them in Sun and Moon and then not be able to put them back in XY or Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, that is a fantastic quality of life decision that they made. I'm actually really impressed by that one.
Yeah, because I was expecting I'd have to just transfer all of my Mon there and, you know, do it that way. But in this case, I can just finish up the Pokédexes pieces and, you know, in XY, Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire, which for whatever I don't have, and then not necessarily have to worry about, like, transferring my team Pokemon, at least.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, it'll also, Pokemon Bank will be showing all of your stats for all of your linked games, which I think is really cool, so it'll also tell you, like, if you're looking at your Pokemon Bank Pokédex, it'll tell you, like, which game your Pokemon is currently living in, like, how many Pokemon you've caught in each of your games, the number of eggs you've hatched in each of your games, all of your, like, encounter stats. So it's really going to be, like, your one-stop shop for, like, your master Pokédex, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, and I already had re-subscribed, or whatever you want to call it, you know, you pay for a year of access. I'd already done that back in, like, December in anticipation of this, so it's just a matter of actually going and doing it, because what I did not mention is that you can get a Munium Z, which is Mew's unique Z crystal, if you do it. I think it's October is the cutoff date, but yeah.
I think that's what I read, yeah.
So it's pretty awesome.
Oh, that's exciting. What Z move does it get for
it uses
that?
Genesis Supernova, which is a 185 special attack power attack.
Ooh,
and changes
girl.
The field to psychic terrain. So that will be pretty awesome.
That will be OPAF.
I mean, it's a Mew, so.
I don't understand what you just said. Young person lingo isn't my thing.
Better start hanging with Team Skull.
Yo, yo, yo. To celebrate the official release of the Sun and Moon set, Toys R Us will be holding another promotional event. This will happen on Saturday, February 4th. I believe it's scheduled between 12 and 2 p.m. In your local time zone. This is to celebrate the cards coming out here for the Sun Moon set. Attendees will receive an exclusive foil Cosmog from the set with a special Toys R Us stamp, as well as the Sun and Moon collector's album featuring Solgaleo and Lunala booster pack artwork. You'll probably want to get there pretty early, as these events tend to go pretty quick for the high-end promotional stuff. Last time I went to one of these, I did not end up getting anything because they were prioritizing children getting that stuff, which I understand and get, but sad, I wish I had been there earlier. So maybe if you have a small child, take it with you.
Yeah, use your children to your best advantage.
It reminds me of the time that Trainer Spike and I went to get a Mew, and this was back in like the GBA days, and they ran out, and we were disappointed, but this like 12-year-old kid in front of us was about to like break down crying.
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, we felt for him.
That kid's probably like in his 20s now.
As has been previously noted, we now have Pokemon Duel available in English for Android and iOS. This is the English version of the Japanese release, Pokemon Co-Master, which you might be familiar with as the like electronic version of the Pokemon trading figure game that was on store shelves, I don't know what, like 10 years ago now?
I don't even remember that, to be honest.
It's been a while.
Either way, the point is, Pokemon Duel is described in the official PR as, Pokemon Duel is a strategy board game that uses virtual Pokemon figures. Build a deck with your favorite figures and then leap into a league match. Compete with players from around the world for a chance to enter the top league rankings in league matches. You'll fight your rivals in real time. Win duels, get all kinds of cool figures and items, and make your deck stronger. I have played a good amount of Pokemon Duel now. I really, really dig it. I think it's really cool. Sidekick, have you played Pokemon Duel yet?
I have not had a chance to, but I'm, you know, definitely interested. I know we were following it since, at least over on Game Buoy, you know, we talked about it when it was Pokemon Co-Master in the pre-stab days.
Absolutely. And Sulker, what about you?
I'm actually kind of disappointed in this release. To kind of highlight my issues with it, I tried to load it the moment you started talking about this game, and it's still not loaded up on my phone, as you can see here. It's just a black screen. And that's kind of been my issue with the game. I'm sure it's a lovely game, but I've had trouble navigating through its user interface. It's hard to find like where you go to do the quests. I mean, I know where it is now, but the second time I loaded up the game, I couldn't find where to play, and it kept trying to connect me locally to players. Overall, I think this game could be a lot of fun. I just have not had a chance to experience much of it due to the glitchiness of its release.
Understandable. You know, I'm really enjoying it, but I have run into a lot of technical issues, as you noted. And in fact, a couple of my friends on Twitter that I follow have expressed concern for that same issue. So this does appear to be a big issue. A lot of people online, and even here on Poke Beach, which is where we're going to link the news article for this release, I do see some people in the comments talking about having some issues connecting to servers and what have you. So definitely
a
widespread issue, and yeah, a big bummer. So if you can get in, at least, which, you know, I haven't had too many issues myself, I think there is a lot of fun to be had. I hope they can work the kinks out.
I'm surprised that they didn't just tie it in with the Rumble series. I mean, I know it's not really the same gameplay style, but that's what I thought of. I honestly forgot about the training figure game until you reminded me, and that was like a good decade ago. But, you know, remember the Pokemon Rumble U figures? I don't think the other Pokemon Rumble games used little toys, did they? I think that was just Rumble U, where was the little...
I believe Rumble U is the only one that's like made it out here. I think there's also a Japanese Pokemon Metal arcade game, Metal with a D, not a T, that you use like collectible Pokemon medals to summon your Pokies.
Oh, there's also Rumble World for 3DS. Forgot about that. That was last year.
Yeah, there's that too.
But yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't just tie it into that.
You know, I'm not, because again, this game, it is even like the same play mechanics as the Pokemon trading figure game. I almost said trigger game. Like it uses literally like the whole same like chess inspired like battlefield like movement system and everything. So it's very much like just straight up a digital version of that.
Okay, well, hopefully you get what's working. And speaking of glitches, as you were talking about, you know, there's some glitch things happening with the Pokemon Bank, and you know, one of these days I'd like to actually talk about some famous Pokemon glitches maybe. But in the meantime, you are probably most likely familiar with the way to get a Mew in the original generation games.
Let's pretend that I'm not. How do you do that?
I mean, I would have to go back and look at the various different steps, and I...
Well, the TLDR is that you have to use a glitch in order to basically set up, like, a code execution situation, and you generate this glitch item. You have to have, like, Pokemon, like, a specific Pokemon in, like, each slot of your Pokemon party in order to trigger, basically, like, certain values in the game to sort of create, like, the like, an official, like, Mew giveaway code. So it's, you know, it sucks, but at the same time, like, if you glitched your Mew, you probably should have known not to bring him over.
Yeah, and so this glitch was discovered by some Reddit users who figured out, I have no idea how they figured this out, but there's some very, very exact steps that you have to follow to generate an item called the 8F item, and that's a glitch item that basically ends up rewriting the ID number of your Mew, and for whatever reason, the...
Okay, I totally mixed that up. I thought that Sulker was asking how to glitch a Mew to be accepted by Pokemon Bank. I didn't realize you were just talking about how to do the Mew glitch.
Oh yeah, I was just talking about the Mew glitch. Which...
Right, it involves like flying away from a trainer in the area above Cerulean City at the right time. You know, the one past like the Pokemon Bridge. And then you have to go like to a certain place where like the trainer grandpa or something. I don't remember the exact step, but you know, maybe we could talk about that.
We'll talk about it on our glitch episode.
So yeah, if you missed a chance to get a Mew and you're willing to do this, go ahead. But you know, we're not responsible for any Pokebank glitchery that, you know.
Yeah, quite the opposite. We advise you don't get a Mew. If Nintendo's giving this Mewnium Z away, there's probably going to be another Mew giveaway this year. Just wait for that.
Yeah, and I mean, hopefully most of you got the Mew from last year.
So wait, what's happening when you move one of these Mews into the Pokebank?
I think these Mews without this glitch, you just can't. Missing number for whatever reason, you can, but then it'll mess up.
Right, but what's happening when you move the glitched Mew over? That's
what I believe from what I've read.
Well, some people are getting banned for it.
Oh, that's terrifying. Yeah, don't do that, listeners. That's a bad idea.
Okay, for some reason, I thought it just wouldn't let it in.
No, some people who are trying and have gotten it through have been banned. Something to the tune of, I read somewhere, like as many as like 6,000 gamers have had banned copies for Pokebank shenanigans, which seems like an overstatement, but I've seen some people say as many as 20,000. I've seen some people say as few as 2,000, so I'm trying to stick with the middle ground figures that I've seen here.
Well, don't do that.
Yeah, just don't.
Sulker, I believe you have one more piece of adorable news for us.
Just pulling it up. Exciting news, not related to the TCG. Shocking, I know. Which I say shocking to relate to the fact that the Pikachu Yellow Edition new Nintendo 3DS XL was released in Japan last year, is now coming to North America.
Yay.
It'll be released on February 14th, just in time for Valentine's Day, at the low, low price of $199.99. The package does not come with any extras, so that would probably mean we're not getting a copy of Pokemon Yellow on it, or any like other cute
or
Pikachu
even like
related.
An adapter.
I actually believe this one does come with an AC adapter.
What?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. That would suck otherwise.
Actually, most 3DSs don't these days.
Huh.
Yeah, it was kind of a drama thing. This is really cute, but also coming like literally two or weeks or so before the Switch release, so...
Actually, this specific one is AC adapter not included.
No!
I had seen that one of the upcoming new 3DS XL releases is coming with an AC adapter, but I guess it wasn't this one.
Oh, well, so hopefully you have an adapter or can buy one if you're buying this delightful little Pikachu 3DS. The artwork on it is really cute.
It's really cute. It's not Nipplechu.
It's not Nipplechu, but nothing really is. I believe that wraps up our Newsweek, gentlemen, so let's go ahead and kick it back over to Spike for our week's topic of discussion.
All right. Well, so I'm just going to talk about a couple of creepy things about Pokemon. These are my personal favorite creepy things. I will give both Sulker and Slagkick the opportunity to talk about their favorite creepy things if they have anything in mind. But the first one I want to talk about, of course, is Lavender Town. Lavender Town is pretty scary, even within the context of the game. And, you know, I think we all know that, you know, Lavender Town is where Pokemon go when they've died. You know, it's like basically a giant tombstone town, practically. There are Pokemon ghosts all over in the Pokemon Tower. It's just like a really sad place. All of the citizens are like shell-shocked, practically, from like so many ghosts in Pokemon Tower.
And even Gary, I think, they never really say why, but Gary Oak or Blue is there, and like one of his team members is gone after that point. I think it's his Raticate.
I believe
that's
correct.
Sad. I never really clocked that.
Yeah, that's like a whole thing, you know, Pokemon deep lore. People have figured out like which Pokemon died where that show up in the Pokemon Tower.
Yeah, oh, and even just with like the Sylphscope, it was very spoopy.
As someone who comes from a town that is right next to a giant mass cemetery.
Oh
like,
my god, right?
I mean, this place isn't really spooky to me. It just like the first time I got there, like when I was playing this back in 96, I believe. I just remember like, oh, there's a town of all cemeteries. Okay, that's normal.
That's normal. Yeah, people have noted, like I see it listed on Bulbapedia, like if you go and count, like across all of the floors, there are literally hundreds of Pokemon graves in the tower.
That's dark.
You know, of course we have the whole story of the Mother Marowak who was killed protecting her Cubone child, and the ghost of the mother is still there in the tower when you come across it in Red, Green, Blue, Yellow. So it's like a whole thing. Obviously I heard from you, Sulker, but Slagkick, what about you? Were you creeped out by Lavender Town?
Yeah, it just was very, you know, an otherwise uplifting game, aside from, you know, Team Rocket, you know, it was kind of like, what? I mean, I didn't cry, you know, I was like, you know, old enough to, you know, but I was kind of like, whoa, that's kind of a shift in tone. And yeah, I mean, the thing is that, you know, I think that at the time, you know, there were people, you know, there mourning their Pokemon, and they're like, oh, my poor Golduck or whatever. But I liked the possessed psychics the best. They were like, foo, 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 foo.
I think...
Wow.
You know, and another thing, it's not creepy or spooky, but a sad thing I think people overlook is, of course, the Lavender Volunteer Pokemon House in Lavender Town, where, you know, all abandoned Pokemon end up because Mr. Fuji takes care of them there.
Yeah, I like that the...
It's good on Mr. Fuji, but, like, how sad that you have to have, like, a Pokemon orphan house.
I like that Pokemon Origins touched on that a little bit.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that that's probably one of my favorite parts of Pokemon Origins, just the whole like the daycare, or not daycare, but the like rescue house is like seen as like having volunteers who really truly care for these Pokemon that are all sad, as you see in the Cubone storyline, and then just the spooky stuff going on in there as described in the game, but also seeing it fleshed out for the first time, or corpused out, like however you'd refer to like ectoplasm beings. So yeah, I thought that was a great part of that story, and I'm glad they devoted an episode to
it. Yeah, which I was just thinking, you know, of all the stuff that they did not include in Pokemon Origins, they devoted an entire episode to Lavender Town, so, you know, it's definitely resonated with audiences.
And, of course, no discussion of Lavender Town in 2017 could be complete without mentioning, you know, there is also a super famous creepypasta.
Yes.
About Lavender Town, and, you know, the story sort of goes that following the release of Pokemon Red and Green, that there were a huge number of reported child suicides in Japan. Of course, you know, all of the various creepypasta attribute this to, you know, various different malevolent entities. You know, sometimes the story is telling that it's like a song that plays that has like a hidden frequency that like drives the children mad. Sometimes it's like a malevolent ghoul that takes the form of like a Pokemon you can't capture.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the one of the Lavender Town music that has like frequencies that drive children insane. Chain.
Not heard of this prior to today, so I'm actually kind of like, what in the hell?
Oh, are you serious? Yeah, this was a huge thing back in the early, like, 20-teens, late, like, 2000-aughts, or however we call those.
The aughts, probably. But wow, that's really scary. I mean, it, like, makes me think about, like, how I view Japanese horror films a little bit more.
Oh, and that's absolutely the way it's told, with, like, people using link cables and passing malevolent spirits to one another in, like, a suicide circle. I mean, there have been a lot of really, frankly, cool permutations of this creepypasta.
I don't want to sound insensitive or awful, but, like, were any kids, like, killed with link cables?
To the best of my knowledge, no children actually died in relation to this story. I think we would we would be talking about it in a very different tone if we were. No, creepypastas, generally speaking, are not real.
Okay.
But, I mean, I feel like they're probably, like, come up with these creepypasta, tie in some credibility of it, like, being more believable with the, the Pokemon Porygon, Electric Soldier Porygon episode and the seizures that resulted from the strobe effect.
Yes, that is a real thing that happened.
Yes.
I thought that was relating to the anime.
That was relating to the anime, okay.
I'm just saying that, you know, like, mass hospitalization related to Pokemon. Hey, so this could be believable, you know.
I mean, once you link cable trade, you have 7 days.
Before you die, you see the Gyarados.
Ursa Ringu.
Yeah, well done. My last thought on this, of course, is now we're talking about this creepypasta, and, like, I hope that Sci-Fi Network show Channel Zero that's, like, all about adapting creepypasta to, like, TV shows, they should do a haunted video game creepypasta season. Like, between this creepypasta and, like, the Zelda creepypasta, where, like, the game slowly drives you crazy or whatever,
yeah,
you could get a lot
really
of mileage
good,
out of that.
There's some other really good creepypasta involving Pokemon that have nothing to do with the Lavender Town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we'll have to, maybe we can revisit that.
Pokemon Creepypasta, the episode.
Creepypasta sounds like it should be a Pokemon.
Creepypasta sounds like something I want to eat when we're done with this. So, let's move forward. The next one I want to talk about, of course, is the Lumiose City Ghost Girl. Now, this is sort of a big deal because this is the sort of thing that absolutely seems like a glitch. It's the sort of thing that, like, when people used to talk about it back in the day, we were all sure it was a glitch until people on the Japanese side, like, included the ghost girl on Japanese marketing materials. And when people asked Masuda-san about the ghost girl, he did confirm that she wasn't a glitch, but he didn't say anything else about it, and he refuses to this day to talk about the relevance of the ghost girl. The TLDR here, of course, is that the ghost girl appears in a certain building in Lumiose City, all of the music stops, and this girl comes out, and she has, like, a really creepy-looking, almost Ringu-esque walking animation. She, like, floats by, and no matter what, she says, "No, you're not the one." And it's, like, really creepy. Of course, a lot of people figured this was, like, an error because of the way that, like, her creepy walking animation doesn't, like, quite work right. But then, you know, we hear from Masuda-san that, you know, not a bug, not a glitch or whatever. And then she popped up again in Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. So it's pretty wild, and there you find her at Mount Pyre in Omega Ruby Alpha Sapphire, and she says the exact same thing. She does have a different walking animation, but otherwise she's there. She seems to be very specifically there, and more importantly, Mount Pyre in Alpha Sapphire Omega Ruby is where dead Pokemon go. So it's kind of clear, like, there's something to this ghost girl, and to this day no Pokemon trainers have ever figured out what it is. What are your guys' thoughts on the Lumiose City Ghost Girl?
Yeah, I love this story. There's been a lot of theories that she's looking for someone with a specific trainer ID or something like that, but I don't know. I feel like there are a lot of unsolved mysteries that, you know, maybe there's something hidden in Sun and Moon or yet to be.
Well, you know, there are a lot of the Pokemon Deep Lore folks that we keep seeing the Pokemon Deep Lore become more and more relevant as the games go on. Most more specifically in Pokemon Sun and Moon, there are a lot of direct connections to the Pokemon deep lore, a lot of people wonder if the Ghost Girl isn't a part of that.
Hmm. I mean, so I only remember seeing her in X and Y and being like, what? What does this mean? I think I was only half paying attention and like, did I miss a line of dialogue or something? And then she was gone and I was just like, what did I just experience? So yeah, I've always wondered about that and I'm glad to know that there is no real answer about it.
All right. Does anyone else have anything to add?
No.
All right. Well, then I want to move on to the Ruins of Alph. And this is, of course, really interesting because it's something that happens in Gold and Silver and in Heart Gold and Soul Silver. So it's clearly, I remember at one point way back in the day when Gold and Silver were like a new thing, people thought this was just like a glitch and something that just strangely happened, but that it's been specifically like recurring has sent that into the trash heap. Basically what happens is if a player listens to the Pokégear radio when it's set to the right station, they will hear what is known as mysterious transmission. In Heart Gold and Soul Silver, you have to specifically be within one of the chambers of the Ruins of Alph. But basically what you'll hear are like the melody of the Azure Flute. You'll hear like distorted Pokemon cries, including like a very slowed down version of Ho-Oh's cry. And actually like back in the day, I'm like when Gold and Silver came out, I was working two jobs. I was like always super tired. Anytime I was playing Gold and Silver, it would be like in the dark. Like I'm super exhausted playing with like a little like Game Boy light on my Game Boy because, you know, those old Game Boys had awful screens.
And no backlighting.
And hearing these sounds like coming out of my Game Boy through my headset, like used to freak me out. Like this one was like terrifying to me. Although, you know, obviously in the modern day, it's probably a little less scary. For me, this really ranks because it used to freak me the heck out. I read about it on like Game Facts or something, one of those places that used to be super popular to talk about games. And it was like, oh, this can't be real. And then I was like, oh my God, this is real and I need a blanket and like a teddy bear right now. Something cool about it, though, is that people have noted tuning into the mysterious transmission does increase the chance that your next encounter with an unknown is going to be in a shape you haven't yet encountered.
Oh, that's kind of useful mechanically, at least.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear from you guys. What do you think of the mysterious transmission?
I mean, I've never experienced that particular transmission. I guess I just didn't spend enough time in Heart Gold and Soul Silver to really do that. But that is, it's a little creepy, but it's a little mechanically useful, which I like compared to, say, Ghost Girl of Lumiose. So I now need to go back and play that just to experience this creeptastic sounds.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I loved about Gold and Silver was the radio. So the fact that, you know, the idea of like spoopy radios, I mean, the indie game Sensation Oxenfree basically was centered around that. So just, I love like spoopy radio frequency. So
I wonder if they took any inspiration from that to make that game.
We should tweet at them. I feel like those guys, despite the fact that they're making, you know, Game of the Year level indie games and Mr. Robot and licensed games.
Oh, that game was so good.
It really was. I feel like they're still really in touch with their community. Let's one of us make it a point to tweet at them and ask.
All right.
Well, then last but not least, I would just like to go over a few of my favorite, like, creepy Pokédex entries. Of course, also, if either of you guys have creepy Pokédex entries you would like to add once I have done my fave five, you are more than welcome to do so. I want to start, of course, with Kadabra. This is from Fire Red. It happened one morning. A boy with extrasensory powers awoke in bed, transformed into Kadabra. I kind of love that because that's like creepy body horror stuff, right? Like, could you imagine if all of the Kadabra we've ever fought in Pokemon, other than the ones that evolved from Abra, of course, were just like random children that are now trapped in the form of Pokemon, unable to say anything but their own name?
I mean, I think that that's actually really terrifying body horror, but at the same time, it's a psychic Pokemon. It should still be able to communicate with people.
Ooh, shade. Of course, we also have Drowsy. It remembers every dream it eats. It rarely eats the dreams of adults because children's are much tastier. And that, of course, comes from Silver. And that's, I don't think I need to explain why I think that's terrifying. Slaggy, what do you think of that one?
Yeah, Drowsy's just creepy in general, but,
it just looks like an evil anteater, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
So we also have, of course, Lampent. And, of course, in Black 2, the Pokedex for Lampent says, "The spirits it absorbs fuel its baleful fire. It hangs around hospitals waiting for people to pass on."
Oh, my God.
Right? Like, that's dark AF. Slaggy?
Yeah, I mean, especially since Lampent's so cute. I love that. I love when, like, the cute ones have effed up Pokedex entries.
Yeah, me too. Of course, Phantump remains a favorite of fans. According to old tales, these Pokemon are stumps possessed by the spirits of children who died while lost in the forest. From Pokemon Y. I think that's awesome and super dark and twisted. Phantump is another one that I think is adorable, but it's like clearly super spoopy. Sulker, what do you think about Phantump?
So this one's actually a little bit scarier to me than, say, Kadabra, just because it's like, you have died. Your soul is now stuck in this tree, and someone comes along and catches you and forces you to fight Pokemon. And, like, you maybe were a trainer in your life, and then you died suddenly, and now you're on the receiving end of the pain. So, yeah, terror.
Well, then, what do you think about Yveltal, who in Pokemon Y, when its life comes to an end, it absorbs the life energy of every living thing and turns into a cocoon once more?
Okay, so while that's an awful, terrifying, and really world-ending level, like, Pokedex entry, how was there ever any life on the planet then? Because we know that it's in a cocoon when we get to it in Pokemon Y, so there are still living creatures on the planet, and I just don't know how I feel about that.
As a very notable philosopher once said, life finds a way.
Is that Mewtwo?
Pretty sure that was not Mewtwo, but you know what?
Was he played by Jeff Goldblum?
He should be.
I don't know, Mewtwo had some pretty deep thoughts.
What about you guys? Do you have any Pokedex entries you'd like to share?
I've got a couple, but I'll let Slagkick go first.
Well, I mean, I have one that I want to share about Gengar later when we do our Pokemon of the Week, because Gengar has some pretty creepy ones. The only other one I was going to do was Drifloon. I don't know if that was one of yours, Zulker.
No, go for it.
So Drifloon, the funny thing is that Drifloon has always had kind of a creepy lore around it about how it, like, children who grab onto it, it'll float away. And some of the entries are really kind of strange, and but a lot of them just talk about it loves damp, humid seasons, and sometimes it says that it's formed by the spirits of people and Pokemon. But my favorite ones are from Sun and Moon, which Sun and Moon has some pretty messed up Pokedex entries. So Drifloon in Sun and Moon, in Sun, stories go that it grabs the hands of small children and drags them away to the afterlife. It dislikes heavy children. And then Moon, if for some reason its body bursts, its soul spills out with a screaming sound.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and you know,
that's a great one.
Drifloons are, like, generally pretty cute.
Yeah, absolutely.
Until popped. I would like to call out to Yamask. It's Pokedex entry from Pokemon Black. Each of them carries a mask that used to be its face when it was human. Sometimes they look at it and cry.
Whoa.
So that to me is a really good / creepy one, because again, it's showing that the Pokemon have a level of cognizance about their prior existence and the fact that they died and now are forced into cockfights as dead ghosts. What do you guys think of Yamask?
I think that's terrifying.
Yeah, Yamask is pretty creepy.
Yamask for Yamask?
No.
Another one is Dusclops. Dusclops' body is completely hollow. There is nothing at all inside. It is said that its body is like a black hole. This Pokemon will absorb anything into its body, but nothing will ever come back out. Pokemon Ruby.
Ooh-wee.
I just like that one because it's like there is an all-consuming void that lives within a Pokemon, and if a trainer messes up somehow, it could, like, it accidentally dropped this thing into it. I need to gone forever.
That's a terrifying thought.
I'm glad I could provide you with that. But otherwise, I think that's it for my thoughts on creepy Pokedex entries. I love that they keep putting them out there, and I hope that they keep doing that.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then I want to wrap up this conversation with a little bit more lighthearted Pokedex entry so that we may all laugh and move on. And this is, of course, Darumaka from Pokemon White. Darumaka's droppings are so hot, people used to use them in their clothes to keep themselves warm.
Ew.
Gross out of 10.
Yeah, I don't know if that's scary just as much as Gustine.
Well, if we have no other thoughts on this week's discussion, other than if you out there in internet radio land had some thoughts on this topic, feel free to share them at us.
Yeah, I'd also love to hear your favorite creepy Pokedex entries.
You can probably do this best at stabcast.org.
At stabcast.org over on Twitter.
On Twitter. So let's go ahead and jump into this week's anime discussion. We're going to be covering 4 episodes. That's 2 episodes of Sun and Moon, episodes 11 and 12, and 2 episodes of Pokemon Generations, episodes 9 and 10. Episode 11 of Sun and Moon is Satoshi visits Kaki. Satoshi and Pikachu visits Kaki's family on Akala Island, where they run a dairy farm. Team Skull interferes when Satoshi and Kaki are on their way for a special delivery. So this episode's a very cute, like, I wouldn't necessarily say filler episode. It's basically Ash goes to Kaki's farm to eventually challenge him to a Pokemon battle, but in the time that he's there, ends up helping with chores, ends up meeting Kaki's family, which includes a mother, sister, and nerdy, like, dad figure, which is strange because of many, like, the rest of the family, like, has this wild look to them, which I adore, and we could see further evidence of this in Kaki's grandfather, who was the former kahuna of the island, who has since passed on, but was the person who basically helped him get his Z ring.
Are you saying he was a hot grandpa?
No, that was literally you. You said that during the episode. Yeah.
Granddaddy.
Yeah, no, it was specifically really strange to hear.
I said he probably was a looker in his day. Not to be confused with looker, though.
Are you sure you didn't use the term daddy? Because I'm pretty sure you did.
Yeah, you did. Some highlights from this episode. In the opening cold open, I guess, we get Ash training with Professor Kukui on the beach where he wants to do more Z-ring training, and Kukui suggests that he uses Mokuro to test out how well it uses the Normalium Z, which we get to see some really cool animation around. We also have some really good moments with Kaki's sister not being allowed by Kaki to do even the most simplest of tasks because he's afraid she'll hurt herself. With a, like, post-credits scene of him trying to stop her from putting a pizza in the oven, and yes, he completely ruins it. And I also want to say that Kaki's milkshakes brings all the Satoshis to the farm. This is also my why Sun and Moon makes me so damned hungry, because we keep getting episodes where, like, Satoshi focuses on wanting to have ice cream or malasadas, and I'm just, like, so hungry by the end of any given 30-minute episode. What did you guys think of that episode 11? Let's start with Spike.
Well, it really brought to mind just how much this series focuses around food, which, you know, you were just mentioning, but we also saw in both this episode and the next episode, Team Rocket sort of establishing their base on Alola, in the Alola region, because, you know, they're being constantly brought all this delicious food by their Beware, and they don't want to leave. And every other sequence of any episode of the show, someone is eating.
I mean, I'm totally okay with that.
Even if it's a rock ruff going like,
rah! Because the food looks really good, so yeah. I want
Malasada donuts.
What did you think about this episode, Slykick?
I'm sorry. No. Go ahead. I wanted to say, you know, I did share your opinion that this was fundamentally sort of a filler episode. I know you didn't want to commit to that term because it has a negative connotation, but, you know, it's the kind of episode, to me, it's the kind of episode that could be called filler because if you were doing a series rewatch, you could skip it and miss literally nothing.
That's accurate.
That having been said, I tremendously enjoyed it. I actually thought it was a lot of fun. Both of these episodes probably could be called filler, but I really enjoyed both of them. I thought they were both really great episodes, and Sun and Moon has made me like Team Rocket, so pretty interesting. Ultimately, Sun and Moon episode 11, Satoshi visits Kaki, thumbs up from me.
And what about you, Slykick?
Yeah, something that was surprising is because when, like, a few minutes into the episode, because there's this other subplot about that Kaki helps deliver milk to the local island.
Milk lemonade.
From the milk tanks. And so there's this kid who's like, oh, I want to make this Mokuro birthday cake for my mommy. And so can you make sure to deliver the milk really early?
Hey, look, that kid never called him mommy. He's not Mike Pence, okay?
No, for his mommy. But anyway, You know, so I was like, oh, well, Team Rocket's gonna, because they were spying on the ride Pokemon. So I was like, oh, Team Rocket's gonna, like, mess it up, and then they're gonna be late. But it was actually Team Skull. And so I was pleasantly surprised that something that, like, I really expected a really predictable, you know, Team Rocket moment ended up being a Team Skull moment.
Yeah, and I was actually really glad to see that change, because I had expected when we saw the, like, blast that came out of the forest, I think it was some dragon move, I was like, oh, here comes Team Rocket, we're gonna get the, hey, wait, that's Team Skull. And they had, like, a specific, like, we're gunning for Cocky, because in the first episode, Skull fucked us with his Z move the first time around.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, in the games, was he... He was not really associated with the ranch, was he?
I don't believe so, no.
So I thought it's interesting to see the changes, and I'm like, you know, we didn't even have Alima at all on Melee Island, so I'm wondering if he's even going to be a trial captain, so it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. But I also really liked that, you know, because as far as the other students at the Pokemon school, it's not that he was ever, you know, actually, like, rude or anything, but he was kind of a little less approachable. I feel like he and Ash kind of are more buddies after this, and you even see that in the following episode, too, so I like that character development.
Yeah, that was great. Let's go ahead and jump over to Sun and Moon episode 12. The extracurricular lesson is on Hidoide. Professor Kukui takes Satoshi and the other students for a special lesson at the beach, where they come across a bunch of Hidoides, which cause a lot of trouble for Satoshi, the other students, and Team Rocket. In this episode, we get a lot of cute moments with the kids from the Pokemon school. They're basically playing on the beach or playing in the ocean with Satoshi and gang. As Slykick had mentioned previously, Kaki even joins in on, like, the fun of playing, like, splashing in the water, joining the boys' team. It was a really cute moment. This episode, however, I would say is more of a Team Rocket focus, which I really appreciated since we've kind of had a lack of them in the series. Not lack, but a lesser influence on them. We get to see Giovanni reaching out to Team Rocket, who has kind of settled into, like, relaxing on the island because of Beware basically keeping them captive in its den.
Cuddling with them.
And cuddling with them, giving them various berries, making honey snacks for them. It's all super cute stuff. And then they're reminded, oh yeah, you're supposed to be here, or you're supposed to be in the Alola region catching Pokemon, which Giovanni's assistant basically calling them out for being like, you've caught one Pokemon, when they refer to Mimikyu. And they're like, no, we also definitely caught that Beware that's over there lifting rocks and throwing them around for no reasons. So they decide that they're gonna go and catch new Pokies. They go over to the beach near where the Pokemon school kids are, try to fish up some Pokies. That doesn't work out. One of my favorite highlights in that particular part is Musashi, or Jesse, if you're an American follower, gets out, like, a Malasada she bought and wasn't gonna share it with anyone, and then this Wingull just flies down and snatches it from her.
Yes!
And then we get to see it feeding it to its cute little babies, so I thought that was cute.
Super cute.
Also, while they're, like, Meowth is like, hey, where did Mimikyu go? And sees, like, its cloth floating on the ocean, and then, like, you see a shadow under the water and Mimikyu's glowing eyes, and then it cuts away to Meowth basically being dead.
Yes.
Which they're all like, why is Meowth floating upside down
He's
in the water?
Lazy.
Stop being such a punk. And then, like, his spirit floats back into his body. He's like, I went to the other world again. And they're just like, calm down. But none of them knows what horrors Meowth knows. And then, like, they're like, what are you talking about, Meowth? Mimikyu is right over there, because he's like, I saw its form again. And then, like, you get this super creepy version of its, like soaking wet form, like, with the paint mask, like, mascara running down its face, and all of them getting terrified. I was there for that.
Yeah, it was actually really appropriate, because it was super creepy.
And then, obviously, we get the focus Pokemon of the episode, the Hidoide, which, like, start, like, coming out of the ocean in a swarm and scaring Ash and friends. Eventually, one meets up with Kojiro, or James, and absolutely falls in love with him, because, as Meowth describes it, he resembles his one true love, or its one true love. Eventually, they fight with Satoshi, who has, like, extracurricular, like, has to go, like, find beach Pokemon. Both his Pikachu and Mokuro get attacked by Team Rocket with its new ally, who then, basically, they mess him up. Both Pikachu and Mokuro get knocked out, and they're about to basically capture Pikachu for the first time, and And then Beware just pops out of the ocean, hugs them, and slowly walks off. And they're like, no, we need to go back and please stop.
I love that. Usually he like runs off across the water. He just like saunters off.
Yeah, because he wasn't going, they weren't blasting off. So he wasn't saving them. He was just taking them home, as it turns out, for dinner. So they basically decide they're going to live in his cave as kind of their secret hideout. And then Hidoide joins with their team permanently getting in a Pokeball. I thought this was actually a really good episode. I like that we get some progress on Team Rocket having a second new Pokemon. Ultimately, I enjoyed this. What about you guys?
I am a noted anime Team Rocket hater, but it's getting real hard. After these two episodes, I'm growing pretty fond of Team Rocket. I thought this was a really fun episode. And again, I cannot understate how much I enjoy both, the Mimikyu killing Meowth, as well as the fact that, you know, Team Rocket finally won, but they still didn't get anything. I just thought that was a really good subversion of sort of the Team Rocket LOL trope.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I really liked Hitoide, who, if you're more familiar with the Japanese names, it's Marini. And I'm really hoping that eventually it evolves into Toxapek and still treat James the same way.
Hopefully.
Because Toxapek is like, I guess it's not that big. It's only 2 foot. I thought it was like huge, but still, you know, like it's not really like a little cute Pokemon anymore. So I hope it's still like, and like in love. And I thought it was a really cute little Easter egg that Jesse and James had Koffing and Ekans lures when they were fishing, and Meowth had a little golden Meowth.
Yeah, that was a nice little throwback. I love that.
So yeah, I really enjoyed this episode, and I agree with Trainer Spike. I'm finding it a lot more tolerable to, you know, enjoy, or I'm finding Team Rocket a lot more tolerable because they aren't just doing the same exact thing in a giant, you know, contraption again. Like, you know, they're interesting.
Like literally every episode of X and Y.
Yeah, so their appearances are more meaningful, and it makes it a lot more enjoyable.
All right, let's jump over to Generations Episode 9, The Scoop. News reporter Gabby and her cameraman Ty uncover top secret footage of a Pokemon battle between two legendary Pokemon in outer space, Deoxys and Mega Rayquaza. Normally, these descriptions kind of cover the whole episode, but there was a lot of subterfuge in this episode with Gabby and her cameraman Ty sneaking into a government agency to get coverage of this footage. For me, this was a great episode with the fight sequences between Rayquaza or Mega Rayquaza and Deoxys. I enjoyed pretty much everything about it, especially the little Gabby has a USB stick that she's using to try and get this information out to the public, and it has a cute little Gulpin charm on it, which she eventually uses like when they get caught to like use as a way to like throw her USB stick so that they can like make a quick escape. What did you guys think of this episode?
I am typically very critical of Generations, but this episode I unequivocally loved. There was one thing in the narrative that like I would have done it a little differently, but it's not like a failing on the part of the episode. I really, really enjoyed this episode.
Yeah, the times that I like Generations the most is when it focuses on side characters like Gabby and Ty. I always enjoyed them in the original games, you know, when they would interview you and then you could see the Pokemon battle on TV. But
yeah.
So it's nice to see them get a little more, get a little moment in the spotlight. And I thought Ty's character design looked super cute, and I loved his Rotom t-shirt.
Oh, I thought that was a really cute shirt. I wish I had that. Let's jump over to episode 10, The Old Chateau, which is almost like we planned it for this episode. Within the Sinnoh region, Cheryl and her Chansey arrive at the Old Chateau in Eterna Forest, unaware of its haunted nature. So essentially, we get Cheryl, who is traveling with her Chansey. She wants to find a place to stay for the night and stumbles upon this very nice-looking old chateau. She enters, and the servant, butler, or house owner, this older gentleman, greets her, says, I'm fine with you staying here. Let me, like, show you to dinner and then your room. So as they're walking, there's this, like, sinister portrait of that man, like, that follows them with glowing red eyes. They go to this dinner where we initially see this, like, great spread of food, but as it cuts back to the main sequence, we could see that there's no food there and that both Cheryl and Chansey are eating
like,
nothing.
That's so good.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the horror aspect of it, where, like, what's going on here? Why are they not seeing what's going on? And then the butler's taking them to their room, and as he turns a corner, they follow, but he's no longer there. He comes up behind them and just keeps walking until he, like, starts either falling through the ground through,
like
ectoplasm
dissolving
or
into
dissolving
the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically dissolves into ectoplasm.
And then explodes into this, like, terrifying visage of a haunter. And I've never seen a haunter look so scary as it does in this. And then, like, the whole house goes crazy and, like, we get screaming. And then they wake up in a dilapidated version of the house, which is probably its true form we're left to imagine. And then this terrifying, creepy mystery girl descends from the sky and is, like, basically damning them to hell. And it, like, cuts out on screams. So I was a real fan of this episode, and I wonder if that mystery girl is the same that we were talking about from Lumio City.
Right?
I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was a creepy replay on this sort of material. I was here for it. Let's start with you, Slykick. What do you think about this one?
I thought that if, I mean, not that I thought had a problem with it being Pokemon, but I thought if this wasn't like Chansey or, you know, clearly Haunter, and, you know, if you weren't familiar with the old chateau, you know, actually being from the Diamond and Pearl games, I thought that, you know, if with a few changes, this could have just been a little spooky anime short. So, like, I loved it. Like, I thought it was, like, really dark, but kind of, like, also in a silly way. Like, I thought it was great.
What about you, Spike?
I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was really funny that, you know, it's sort of, like, on a whim for me to be like, we're gonna do two episodes of Generations this week. And it turned out to be perfect, because this episode was creepy AF. It was all, you know, largely about a haunter. I really enjoyed it. This was, for me, a really great set of two episodes of Generations that really left me wishing Generations were an ongoing project.
Same here.
You know, something that I just thought was interesting is that, you know, it's been a while since I've played Diamond and Pearl, but the old chateau in those games is where you get Rotom, and I don't remember it being quite as creepy, but I mean, then again, Diamond and Pearl, that's been, what, 10 years?
Yeah, something like that.
It has been a hot minute.
All right, well, that wraps it up for our anime discussion. Next week, we'll be covering episodes 13 and 14 of Sun and Moon, and we will continue covering two episodes per show for Generations, so that'll be 11 and 12 next week. With that, we're going to go ahead and do our Pokemon of the Week, if you would, Slagkick.
Yes, in keeping with the theme, the Pokemon of the Week is Gengar, or in Japanese, Gengar. So not too much of a change there. Gengar is, of course, a ghost and poison type Pokemon introduced in Generation 1. You can get a Gengar by trading a Haunter. So, you know, that was one of the, along with Graveler and Kadabra and Machoke, the ones that evolved when you trade with a Link Cable. So that was always something kind of cool. Gengar can evolve into, into Mega Gengar using Gengarite. And I wanted to share, in the spirit of our spoopy Pokedex entries, two entries. The original one from Red and Blue is, under a full moon, this Pokemon likes to mimic the shadows of people and laugh at their fright. And that's definitely, you know, in the anime and stuff, it was, you know, Gengar is kind of meant to be, like, in your shadows and stuff. And so I thought that was, you know, an iconic entry. But my favorite Gengar entry is from Sun, which, you know, like I said, Sun and Moon have some of the creepiest ones. Should you feel yourself attacked by a sudden chill, it is evidence of an approaching Gengar. There is no escaping it. Give up.
Oh, wow. I love that one.
Yeah, so really creepy. And the name of Gengar is most likely a shortening of Doppelganger. And so that is, you know, most likely where the name came from. But then there was one of the kanji in the Japanese name of Gengar can be used in words such as phantom or illusion in Japanese. And in Danish folklore or Scandinavian folklore, there is Gengangar, which are certain type ghosts found in Scandinavian folklore. So that's kind of cool.
Huh, interesting.
Some notable appearances in the anime are Morty's Gengar in the Ecruticity Gym in the Gold and Silver era. There is Agatha's Gengar in the Scheme Team episode. There's also the first actual appearance is when Ash sees the TV battle, which is meant to be like the battle little sequence that you see at the beginning of the Pokemon Red and Green game. So it's fighting a Nidorino. But the first time that he sees it in person is in the Tower of Terror episode, which is when he, you know, he goes to fight Sabrina, the psychic trainer, but he needs a ghost Pokemon. So this is when there were a silly trio of Ghastly, Haunter, and Gengar. And so those, you know, some silly moments. There's also a giant Gengar fighting a giant Alakazam in the Ancient Puzzle of Pokemopolis, which is another early, you know, original series episode. Drake in the Orange Islands uses a Gengar to battle Ash. And in the Diamond Pearl anime arc, there is the Hearthhome City gym leader, Fantina, who sounds like she'd be selling Fanta to drink, but that's a
Fantana. Don't you want a Gengar?
I do!
And so it ends up being defeated by Ash's Buizel. And the the last notable appearance I wanted to share was that a shiny Gengar is who is able to mega evolve is in Volcanion and the Mechanical Marvel, the movie that's now just recently available in English.
Oh yeah, I remember that sequence. That was pretty cool.
One other little tidbit that I wanted to share that I surprisingly didn't see mentioned, at least when I was scanning through like Bulbapedia and such, is that there was a lot of theories back in the day that because of Clefable and Gengar having similar shapes, kind of, that Gengar was actually Clefable's shadow. So I thought that was always kind of something cool too, because, you know, Gengar is very much associated with the shadow. So always been one of my favorite. I love Ghastly Haunter and Gengar quite a bit. I've always, you know, thought they were great Pokemon. You know, ghost type were immune to, always have been immune to normal type attacks. So always been a good, solid member of the team and, you know, can learn things like Psychic and Dream Eater. So always a good, I always thought they were a good alternative to having a Psychic type on the team if you wanted something different.
Yeah, I used to do that too.
Excellent. With that, any thoughts about Gengar before we move on to our link cables?
I like Gengar. It's a really cool design, and I was really happy when he got that Mega Evolution you referenced.
Yeah.
I like Gengar a lot.
You know, been a really popular one, of course, in Pokken Tournament as well.
Oh, that's true. I hardly ever think about Pokken Tournament. But
yeah.
Why would you?
Oh, burn on that poor game.
It ain't poor. It sold a lot of units, and no one likes it, so that's like double win for that game.
Fair enough.
Anything else?
No, I think that's it. If we want to go over to our link cables.
Yeah, so this week we explore the spookier side of Pokemon. What are your favorite haunting moments? Ryder Blades over on Twitter said, the Ghost Trial in Sun and Moon was great. The music's especially.
I completely agree.
Oh yeah, that was, why didn't we even mention that? I mean, I know we just covered Sun Moon, but like that particular trial was very creepypasta.
And also the Generations ep with Gardenia too. She totes died there. Ghost emoji. So thanks to Ryder Blades for tweeting us. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, we always love your feedbacks. We love your subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on services such as iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play. We like your Facebook likes, and we freaking love Twitter.
Friggin' love Twitter.
We love Twitter.
You can tumble with us on Tumblr. You can email us at mail@stabcast.org.
Mail@stabcast.org.
And all of our episodes are available on stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org.
Spike, shout it out to some not-so-spoopy podcasts.
All right, well, I'd like to point you in the direction of the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can hear such shows as PokéStop. Join podcasting veterans Rob Roberts and Shane Alenko for a regular chat on Pokémon topics like the handheld games, Pokémon Go, and spin-offs of the franchise.
Isn't he Shane Ryder now?
You can also hear GameBuoy.org, where
GameBuoy.org.
myself and Slagkick appear as your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. And last but not least, you should listen to the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series upon which it's based out of Japan. Slaggy, what do you think people should be listening to?
Well, aside from Stabcast, I think that people should tune in when we start up our next season of Reading is Fundamental, the podcast for myself, Trainer Spike, Delvin from VG Realness, and Rob Robert serve tea and dish on everything RuPaul's Drag Race. So we're looking forward to that, hopefully starting back up soon. And you can also hear Rob Roberts along with Techmaster Loki and Dark Sakura on Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, the longest running video game radio show on the internet. And, you know, definitely we are indebted to them. You know, they've basically inspired us to be podcasting. Sulker.
It's super effective. PKMN Cast, a Pokemon website for news and reviews that explore the ins and outs of the Pokemon franchise, covering the games, anime, and beyond, all this and a weekly podcast. I'd also like to say congratulations to them on their 250th episode that they just celebrated this week. Mythical, Mazes, and Magikarps, taking two of the best aspects of geek life, GM Whitewing hosts a troop of unlikely heroes as they explore the Pokemon world of the past with classic D&D classes and villains, currently on hiatus until its third season. I'd also like to shout out to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is a trusted healthcare provider and informed educator, a passionate advocate, and a global partner helping similar organizations around the world. Planned Parenthood delivers vital reproductive healthcare, sex education, and information to millions of men and women and young people worldwide. I'd also like to shout out to The Trevor Project, founded in 1998 by the creators of the Academy Award-winning short film Trevor. The Trevor Project is a leading national organization organization providing crisis intervention and suicide prevention services to lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning young people ages 13 to 24. You can donate to both of these helpful organizations on their websites, and we'll also link that over at stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org.
And with that being said, I believe we have theme music, Slagkick.
Yeah, we have music. It's great. Our music was done by Nathan Sharp, a.k.a. Nate Wants to Battle. This is his interpretation of Professor Sycamore's theme from X and Y. And, you know, we love what Nate does over on his YouTube channel. Lots of great anime dub, like, translations that, like, you know, if that sounds like a bad thing, but he is, like, really good at them. Like, his translations are great and his recordings are awesome. He also does, you know, anime and video game parodies. And so, you know, go support him, buy his stuff on iTunes and all that jazz.
And all that jazz.
Well, actually, he's more of like a pop punk, but you know, all that pop punk.
All right. All that having been said, it has been a lovely Sunday afternoon talking to all of y'all out there in Internet Radio Land. I hope you have had half as much fun listening as we've had recording, but it is time for us to go. So until next time, keep catching, keep training, and Ashimari, Ganbarun!
Gangar, Geto Daze!
Psychic power is the power of your mind.
Mic check, mic check. I am checking this mic.
Ghetto da mic.
Oh, that was my bad.
Sun, moon. Get this mic a poppin'.
Mics are hot.
Wait, mic like Mike Pence, like mommy.
Ah! Gross.
The ultimate shade of it all.
Do you think Professor Oak calls Ash's mom mommy?
Yes. I think a lot of Pokemon professors call Ash's mom mommy.
Well, I mean, a lot of people ship Oak and Delia, so.
I ship. Wait, is that her name?
Yeah.
You know Ash's mom's name?
Yeah.
I mean, he could be making it up, but I'd be fine with that.
No, her name's Delia Ketchum.
I ship Delia and Kukui.
That's true. They have met in canon.
He's married.
Hey, he just wants to use his blast cannon in her. Wow.
I don't know. He could be Polly, like with like Beware and Team Rocket.
I was going to say Polly Toad, Polly King.
Polly, you mean Polly Wrath?
Polly Whirl.
Oh, let's give it a Polly Whirl.
Wow.
But Slagkick, you're a Polly Toad.
Better beware because I'm going to unleash my Polly Wrath.
Hated it.
Hello, Poke fans. Welcome to the same type of son of a bitch.
Welcome to the same tyke attack bonus.
We're talking about the preschooler trainer class today.
It's our new focus. Baby fights everywhere. Alola.
Alola. Alola!